welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamine, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. And today we bring you the natural nurse and Dr. Z right here on Gary Knowles Network, Progressive Radio Network. And one thing that I love about doing shows here on Progressive Radio Network is that there is so much information for you on so many different shows. And we love you to listen in while we do the show live, and we love to get feedback from you. But if that's not a convenient time, you can always go to the archives at Progressive Radio Network, which is at prn.fm, and click on Archives. You can then find the many excellent shows at this station, and in particular, this show is Natural Nurse. Once you click on Natural Nurse, it will open up to the archives, and you can hear all the past shows that we've done, get information about our guests, click through on their websites to learn more, and in general, keep updated in terms of the latest information in the world of natural medicine. Now, also, we love you to come on board with us and send us your comments. You can go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, like us there, or send us a message. You can go to naturalnurse.com to keep up with our schedules. We'll learn about our many courses. We're very busy teaching natural medical techniques to students all over the world, since so much of that now can be done just by sending PowerPoint presentations, linked to videos, and then having real-time phone conversations, both individually and in groups. So it's a whole new world out there. Today we gave a class on aromatherapy, and five classes on aromatherapy leads to a certificate from Natural Alternatives Health Education and Multimedia Services, which has been run by myself and co-host Dr. Eugene Zamperone since 1990. So we're very busy with a lot of things there. Also, you can join us in person on September 30th. We will be at Gilberti's Organic Herb Farm, and that is in Connecticut. It's at a very easy to get to place, which is in Westport, Connecticut. And that's Gilberti's Organic Herb Farm. On October 6th, we are running an evidence-based symposium on natural and integrative health. And amazingly enough, although this is for professionals and does grant 5 CEU credits, it's also open to the public. So anyone can come. You can choose to get the CEU credits or not, but you can attend and find out the latest information about things like arthritis, like herb-drug interactions, drug-nutrient depletions, and the herbs of the tropics, as well as looking at the latest information in functional medicine about autoimmune illness. So that's just some of the many things that you can join us with in person in terms of the events being put on actually around the country by Natural Alternatives. And today I want to thank you for joining us, and I'd like to bring on our guest, Dr. Kenneth Orbach. Dr. Orbach practices integrative and functional medicine at his South Carolina-based practice, Body Logic MD of Greenville. Dr. Orbach utilizes the evidence-based techniques of functional medicine, like we were just talking about, which will be at our seminar as well, to optimize the functions of body symptoms, striving not only to diagnose disease in its early stages, when it can be much more easily reversed, but to prevent it before any damage occurs, which is really the best scenario. Dr. Orbach says, our current medical system, on the other hand, is designed to diagnose and treat symptoms of disease when it is in its final or acute stages. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Orbach.
You're very welcome. It's good to be with you.
Now, you, of course, have a regular conventional background in terms of your medical training. Why don't you tell us how you got from that to where you are now in terms of a focus on functional wellness?
That's an excellent question. I practiced family medicine for approximately 20 years. frustration developed as I did not see real responses as far as chronic condition reversal. I was able to manage disease symptoms and help patients with some quality, but I really did not frequently see a disease reversal and improvement. Then I got involved in doing some underlying nutrition in my practice. I started a little bit more slowly. And I also had an own personal injury, which put me into fairly severe adrenal stress. And it was through the work of functional and integrative healthcare that was able to help me recover, which really piqued my interest. And that was about 10 years ago. So 10 to 12 years ago, I started looking a lot more deeper. And then after being introduced to the A4M, the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, and different types of educational seminars, my interest even peaked higher. And then I decided to transition my practice full-time into integrative and functional medicine. And that was more based on my desire to do more of a biochemical type of practice where we look at metabolic derangements and correct them with nutrition and correct metabolic disorders so you can actually see an outcome of healing rather than just an outcome of symptom relief.
That was so true, Dr. Orbeck, and I think that I, who have been doing this since 1964, and I'm involved as a clinical instructor in the Department of Family Medicine at Stony Brook Medical School, so often we see that doctors who do start to look into evidence-based medicine and are really reading their studies really can't help but take this course of action.
That is very true. You know, I look at the word truth. And, you know, if someone doesn't believe in gravity and they jump off a bridge, it still hurts when you hit the ground. And you look at the body, and you look at the truth of biochemistry. I mean, we have mapped genes and we have mapped biochemical pathways and metabolic pathways that we really have not been utilizing to its fullest degree in the treatment of illness. And so if you step back from disease and enter into a picture which is instead of the how, what medicine, what do you have and what do you give for the disease you have, rather than focusing on the disease process and ask the question why, you know, why is this happening? And looking at the metabolism and biochemistry, if you can find breakdowns at the cell level and then you repair that cell nutritionally, hormonally, you know, neurotransmitters, amino acids, fatty acids, whatever it takes, give the body what it needs. It's amazing how when you turn these genes on, how the body will repair and regenerate, and you'll get self-healing.
And I can hear just from the excitement in your voice, and that's so true with physicians who do this kind of evidence-based functional medicine, that it really mm-hmm. becomes a joy to be a doctor. I'm sure when you began your studies, it must have been about wanting to help people.
Absolutely. And then over time, your joy kind of dissipates and it turns into more of a monotony as you continue to be taught what to use for what disease. And then when you learn and go get involved in the metabolic derangements of the body and in functional medicine, which is almost like practicing more engineering, I'm always excited to come to work in the morning because I never know what's going to walk in my door. Every patient is different. They may come in with the exact same symptoms, but they have different metabolic derangements. And when you look at their biochemical pathways, when you do the functional testing, you become in sorts of engineer putting together nutrients and putting together different substances that the body requires and doesn't have. And then you step back and it's like, wow, you watch the body's healing process. That to me is a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun with medicine again, and I'm really enjoying my patients. Taking care of them one individual at a time and doing a different type of approach.
They start actually feeling better, and sometimes from illnesses where they've been sort of thrown off the shelf. Now, I'm looking at your website, drkennethorbeck.com, and we will be talking about things like low testosterone, et cetera, but we have time to investigate some other topics. And I see you wrote an excellent article about fibromyalgia. So let's talk about that a little bit, because that's terrible how people are just given like an antidepressant and told to go home.
Well, it is very true. And You know, fibromyalgia is interesting because I think it's extremely overdiagnosed. You know, if an individual walks in and they have lack of energy and diffuse pain and nothing can be found, then all of a sudden they're given the diagnosis of fibromyalgia. Where true fibromyalgia is actually a nervous system breakdown in the pain regulatory mechanism, you know, I believe only 5 or 10% of the patients diagnosed with fibromyalgia actually have that entity where there's that nervous system excitability. And the others have many, many different types of metabolic derangements. For example, I've seen an individual in my practice that had, for example, toxic metals. And, you know, and the metabolism wasn't functioning normally, and intracellular energy was compromised. So I think fibromyalgia should be really, I mean, the definition of fibromyalgia has to be more clearly understood. But the overall fibromyalgia diagnosis out there today, when a patient comes in for fibromyalgia, I start over. And I'll look at that patient. I'll look at them from a functional medical standpoint. I look at things like, what kind of energy is your body able to make? Is the mitochondria really functioning normally? You know, are you producing ATP through the aerobic metabolism? Or do you have nutritional deficiencies within the cell that is not allowing the ATP to be functioned or to be produced down at the end of the cycle? And that can be anything. That can be B deficiencies, different types of vitamins. It could be coenzyme Q10. A lot of different things go on inside the cell. So we look at cell energy. We look at intestinal health is really important. And what I really see, I don't know if it's just the area I live in, South Carolina, but what I really see in my practice is a lot of deficiencies in assimilation and absorption of nutrients in the gut. I see a lot of issues of dysbiosis and intestinal membrane integrity, as well as permeability issues. And when you look at the intestinal area in the gut itself, 80% of the immune system is really located around the gut. So
yeah, people don't realize that. That's why we always did.
I know.
I'm not sure if you knew Dr. Serafina Corsello, but Dr. Corsello was really a forerunner, and in fact started the Orthomolecular Society as well as ACAM.
Yeah.
She was an originator of ACAM, and she worked when Jeffrey Bland was just starting up. He used to come to her conferences,
mm-hmm.
and I worked with her for
mm-hmm.
23 years. And do you know what brought her down was the Office of Professional Medical Conduct came in and took her license away specifically for testing for heavy metals.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, because
they claimed that was not standard
of practice. Yeah.
Right, and there's still controversy today. But, I mean, if you use a good systems approach, like, you know, if you check organic acids and you check, red blood cells and intracellular metals, that's the acute phase reactant, what's being dispensed. And then you check, for example, the fat of the body, you can pull that out with just a simple BMFA-provoked urine and see what you're pulling out of the body. And you compare all those tests, then you can put together a pretty clear picture. And I think
Absolutely.
You and I both know that our environment, I mean, you and I can both move to Alaska and want to escape any toxicology, and we won't, because there's jets flying in our air right now that are burning lead, because that's what you require to make fire consistently in the jet engine. So, you know, lead is being spewed out through the environment. We have many issues of mercury, as you know. We got issues of different types of metals in the environment, in the food we eat, water we drink. Not even to mention the other types of xenobiotics, which are out there, you know, the chemicals and the BCPs and phthalates. So, I mean, we're definitely being bombarded today. I did another article on toxicology, which is closely related to my fibromyalgia article, because it all comes down to, are there toxins affecting your cellular energy? And number two, how well are you assimilated in digesting nutrients into your body? You've got to get them across the gut. And if there is a breakage in that intestinal barrier, see, I look at the gut as the external world. From the mouth all the way down to the anal canal, that's the external world. The inside of the body is outside of the gut. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and we're going to go into that in greater detail, because you have such an excellent in-depth understanding, and you're bringing it into, let's say, reality for your patients, where you can track down, like my co-host on this show, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, always says, he always says he feels like Sherlock Holmes, and he has to do a job of sleuthing around with each patient to find out, you know, what the background of the illness is, what caused it. And, of course, there's emotional issues involved as well. So we're just going to take a couple-minute break. Let's take a little break here, Dr. Orbach, and when we'll come back, we're going to reintroduce you. I'd like to tell our listeners to look at your website, drkennethorbach.com, because you have so much incredible information there. And we will continue right after this edition of the Natural Medicine Chat.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the essential oil taken from the Australian tea tree.
The tea tree, known as Melaleuca alternifolia, grows in only one region of the world, the northeast corner of Australia. It is a full-sized tree of the myrtle family, whose oil has powerful abilities to clean and help heal wounds and skin ailments such as cuts, burns, and rashes. In 1770, the infamous Captain Cook was a lieutenant in the British Royal Navy when his ship landed in Australia. The botanist on board, Sir Joseph Banks, collected samples of a sticky aromatic leaf and brought them back to England for further investigation.
In 1923, an Australian curator and chemist, Dr. Penfold, conducted a study on tea tree leaves and discovered that their essential oils are 13 times stronger as an antiseptic bactericide than carbolic acid, considered the standard in the early 1900s. The oil contains 50 to 60% terpenes, 6 to 8% cineol, which causes its camphor-like odor, and several kinds of alcohols. In 1933, the Australian Journal of Pharmacy, the American Journal of the National Medical Association, and the British Medical Journal reported that tea tree oil is a powerful disinfectant, non-poisonous, non-irritating, and has been used successfully in a very wide range of septic conditions. Australian tea tree oil is mentioned in the British Pharmaceutical Codex of 1949, the UK Medicine List, and the Dispensary of the United States.
During World War II, tea tree oil was considered a standard issue item for all first aid kits for Army and Navy units in tropical regions. The demand for tea tree oil exceeded the supply. However, after World War II, synthetic drugs gained in popularity and the use of tea tree oil in medicine waned. In more recent times, a renewed interest in natural, non-toxic alternatives has triggered a resurgence in tea tree oil research. In 1985, Dr. Paul Belacher, chief of the phytotherapy department at the Faculty of Medicine, University of Paris, worked on several double-blind studies involving tea tree oil and its application as a remedy for candidiasis, chronic cystitis, staph and strep infections, and nail bed fungus. He stated, and we quote, "The essential oil of Melaleuca has entered the team of major essential oils and emerges as an antiseptic and antifungal weapon of the first order in phytoaromatherapy."
Try a few drops of tea tree oil in a steam vaporizer and inhale for blocked sinuses, or rub the oil on chest and back for a cough. The Australian Journal of Dentistry reported that using tea tree oil in dental hygiene and in surgery showed it to be an extremely effective antiseptic. Add a drop on your toothbrush or include it as a gargle and mouthwash. Tea tree oil can be applied directly to the skin. Although it's possible that some people may experience a mild allergic reaction, in-depth research has shown tea tree oil to be non-irritating and safe.
So, listeners, think about including tea tree oil, the first aid kit in a bottle, in your natural medicine chest.
Thank you.
And welcome back once again right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, which we bring you on Progressive Radio Network. That's TRN.FM. And you can join us online at naturalnurse.com. Send us a question or a query or look at our services, books, schedule, classes, anything you'd like to join us with. And also, you can find us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And you can find Progressive Radio Network on Facebook as well. And they post a lot of links to their various progressive programming, and you can find out the best and latest information in the world of natural health, politics, safety, toxicity of our world, all things that you certainly want to know about moving forward. And today we have as our guest Dr. Kenneth Orbeck, and his website is DR for Dr. Kenneth Orbeck, O-R-B-E-C-K, drkennethorbeck.com. He focuses on the targeted use of nutritional supplements and scientifically tested natural medicines to achieve health objectives that are not possible with standard pharmaceuticals. Each patient is taught, and I love that word, taught, in detail exactly what, how much, and when to eat in order to achieve best health. And then bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and individualized fitness and nutrition plans are also employed. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Orbeck.
I'm glad to be back.
You know, I wish that I knew about you. I have to admit I didn't. And a great place for people to go is BodyLogicMD.com, because at BodyLogicMD.com, you're one of the many excellent integrative and more naturally oriented physicians who are part of BodyLogicMD. So they're bringing so many of you together and making it easy access for people wherever they lived. I wish I did know about you, because I actually had a friend who had diabetes and wound up getting a both of his legs cut off. You know, this is serious. And he then passed away at a very young age. And he found me just by searching online, and he found my arthritis book and started reading it. It was just amazed that anyone could say food can change any kind of illness. And he lived in Greenville, so I would have sent him right to you.
Well, I appreciate that. And I can't say enough about BodyLogicMD as a whole. It is that institution that has actually allowed me and helped me with my educational process and integrated me with 60, 65, 70 other physicians around the country who are all board certified in different specialties. And so the wealth of knowledge that I have access to through the Internet on a daily basis is unbelievable. We communicate through email, and we get tremendous amounts of support. And, you know, I honestly couldn't do this type of medicine without that type of support system. It would be too difficult for me to be able to accomplish that.
Well, it's really excellent, because it sets up a system where your patients can get the finest quality interventions and, you know, can help you actually provide that. Because like you said, it's not the normal come in and each person 8 minutes and give them a drug.
No, exactly. All of us are taught to take a functional systems approach. We take a good hour and a half on any initial consultation, understanding the patient's underlying nutritional deficiencies, hormonal deficiencies, metabolic derangements, and then we move forward and get into specifics down the road as we feel necessary based on the symptomatology and response. But it's a three-tiered approach that has been proven successful, and we're getting some great response. I'm real happy about that.
Isn't it great? I am so excited about it, to know that this kind of medicine is becoming more and more available, and I think we'll just have to translate to the standard of care, because it is the standard of care according to the evidence, not according to most conventional practice, however.
And we see that more and more now. I mean, I'm really enthusiastic about the fact that physicians are actually communicating with me locally now. The local practitioners are discussing, you know, these different entities with me. And so the interest has peaked. And I think that the public is driving that, because I think the public is demanding more. And I think physicians are looking at this going, well, you know what? we did study this in medical school. At some point, I did have to learn biochemistry. You know, why is that not part of my practice? And everyone is going to have that realization eventually and realize that because of the response, if you can get the body basically through, you know, the right intervention nutritionally and hormonally or whatever, if you can get that response to be positive and productive without the use of long-term medication, then I think that everyone wins.
So much so. Now, of course, you doctors are doing a great job, and we will applaud you for that. But what it becomes is what you said in what I read a moment ago. You teach your patients so they can look forward to your guidance, but they actually are the ones who have to create change in their physiology. You can't do that for them.
Yeah, I often tell my patients that if you have a pilot flying an airplane and I'm in the control tower and I turn them to, you know, tell them to turn left heading 270 and they refuse to do that, it's not my responsibility that that pilot took that airplane into the mountaintop and crashed. So we can look at functional testing, but if the patient understands why I'm testing, and I try to go through my patients very carefully with what do these tests tell us, and then we ask the why. Why did your body break down? Let's kind of design this picture of why it broke down. And then we can peel the onion and pull one layer at a time and hopefully get back to the core deficiency, you know, once we do all of the gut testing and the hormonal testing, whatever we have to do, toxic metals, whatever. When you peel that onion back and back and back and you take care of and address these issues, and everyone's different which ones to address first, and you set up a game plan, you really have optimal outcome, and the patient's excited because the patient's actually doing the work. We're guiding the patient, but they're being taught about metabolic derangements, and they're also doing the work. They're going home. They're changing their diet. They're eating differently. They're exercising. They're using different nutritional agents. They're reading. They're being educated. I mean, that's why I did, honestly, the blog site is because my patients have to be educated about why we're doing what we're doing. It makes my job so much easier in the end.
So they can just read because somebody else might have been through a similar program.
Exactly. Right.
And
exactly.
I'm sure, like you talked about IgG being so important in terms of the immunoglobulins that line the gastrointestinal tract, that's probably why you do individualized food testing, because not everyone's going to get the same diet.
Exactly. And there are many subtle allergies out that people don't realize. The interesting thing about that type of immunity and food allergy is the body usually craves what it's allergic to. And so your body's telling you to eat these things that are inflammatory. They cause inflammatory excitotoxicity, and then you end up with, once you have inflammation, then you're gonna have breakdown, metabolic breakdown. Because most disease, honestly, the beginning of the disease process before you get the full-blown disease disorder is inflammatory in nature. Most of the diseases are.
Well, that's so true. Now, I do want to go to low testosterone, because I know we have that as what we'll talk about today, and people may be interested in hearing about that and may have tuned in to hear about that. And I think it's really only now becoming known that men are allowed to consider themselves having a hormonal imbalance as they age. And we've even seen those commercials for low T on regular TV.
Exactly. And it's about time, don't you think? I mean, how many of us realize that, you know, we all call this a midlife crisis, right? Daddy at 45 years old or maybe 50 years old goes and buys a sports car. Or maybe he has to take up a hobby where he has to challenge the world or climb Mount Everest. Now, why are we doing that in midlife? Because men, just like women go through menopause, men go through testicular decline or andropause, which is low T. And what happens is there's significant effects on the brain. Testosterone crosses the blood-brain barrier. It's converted to DHT, which is then converted to adenylcyclase, which is extremely important for man's vitality. And it gives men the youthful feeling that they once had and the optimal psychological response. And when you remove that, you get an element of depression. You get an element of you lose that vitality. I don't feel vigorous anymore. And so we try to find that in other areas. And that's what's so dangerous is that as your testosterone declines, you're going to look elsewhere. You're going to go do stupid things like buy a sports car. I mean, I'm not saying that that's bad to do, but I'm saying if you use that as a crutch to enhance your own euphoria, then it becomes very addictive, and it can also be very expensive.
Yeah, well, leave your good old wife for a 20-year-old who's going to dump you in a year. That's a big one.
I wasn't going to go there. I didn't want to go in that direction.
But all kinds of things that are linked to what they call the midlife crisis. But I think that men have been actually gypped in a way, because women, if they do feel a little strange during those menopausal changes, are allowed to say, oh, it's menopause. But men have not been given that opportunity to use it as something that is recognized.
Exactly. Testosterone, remember, is an anabolic hormone, okay? And when you have a reduction in an anabolic hormone, there are some serious signs and symptoms with its decline. All throughout the body. You know, muscle volume and tensile strength of the muscle, this all decreases with reduction in the anabolic hormone. You get a reduction in bone mass with age-related decline in testosterone. That's been proven in many studies. And you get a disproportionate increase in body fat and compared to muscle. And so if you have low testosterone throughout your later adult life and you become a senior adult, then you develop what's called sarcopenic obesity, which is basically the muscles declining, the fibers are being replaced by more fat, and the body's weak. And we now have been, we've been finding in many studies that it's not only bone strength that predicts bone fractures in the elderly. It's muscle mass. It's sarcopenia. And using an anabolic hormone like testosterone and keeping it optimal through life helps reduce body fat, increase muscle mass. It'll keep the male breasts from developing and from developing weight around the abdomen and hips, and that's so very important.
Well, have you found, Dr. Orbeck, that sometimes pharmaceutical drugs that so many men are put on, for instance, statin drugs, also seems to increase that that feeling of mild depression and decreased muscle strength? So a lot of things add up to those issues.
Well, let's look at that for a second. I mean, statins are HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors. And so what is that? Well, where do all the hormones come from? I mean, where do they all start from? Well, they start from cholesterol. Cholesterol goes to pregnenolone. Pregnenolone goes across the pathway to DHEA, testosterone, down in women to estrogen, and down pregnenolone goes to progesterone. So everything really comes from cholesterol. So if you're going to block cholesterol synthesis, I'm not saying statins are always wrong because they have a very good place in medicine, and they're very, very real when it comes to anti-inflammatory components, especially in secondary cardiac prevention. But when you look at it in primary prevention or just cholesterol derangements, you have to be careful because when you block cholesterol, you're blocking the prehormone. Testosterone's going to decline, and so there's a direct relationship to statin use and testosterone reduction. And when testosterone is reduced, then the body sends a signal to the liver to make more what? What is the precursor? Cholesterol. And not only does that happen, but HMG-CoA, I mean, coenzyme Q10 is extremely important in the mitochondrial nucleus portion of the cell in order to make ATP and energy. So basically your body needs coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is extremely important for you to get the full benefits of your cell energy production. And we shut that off with statin. So, I mean, if anybody's on a statin, make sure you take CoQ, at least 200-400 milligrams a day. And if you're not on a statin, carefully consider other agents because it will certainly affect your testosterone production. So that's important to note. And we have to look at, basically, I think what we're getting more cognizant of is the fact that every type of medication, and they're not bad, I mean, they're important, but you have to recognize that medications do have nutritional compromises. So every drug may have a certain type of nutrient deficiency. And as long as we know what they are, and then we give the nutrient along with the pharmaceutical product, you're going to get a much better optimal response.
Yeah, now that makes sense. That's what I would say the whole definition of integrative therapy is. Using, not throwing out pharmaceuticals, not throwing out surgery, but using it appropriately and prudently, because I think it's been used incorrectly as a be-all and end-all because it really does not change the disease progression, but it certainly can be used when appropriate. One thing I've been looking into, I'd like to ask your opinion about this. Some of my patients have asked me, and I'd love to get your take on this. What do you think of when people do not want to use the bone-strengthening drugs because they're having so many known side effects? What about calcitonin, which was an old-fashioned hormonal replacement?
Let me talk a little bit about osteopenia and osteoporosis.
I would love you to.
Different medications. Let's kind of define for a real quick second what causes bone reduction. Okay, there are two components of the bone that's in balance on a seesaw: the osteoblast build bone, the osteoclast lose bone. Okay, now there's a receptor called RANK 1 in the body, RANK. And when you get inflammation in the body, and this inflammation can come from anywhere. I mean, it can come from toxicology issues. It can come from assimilation issues in the gut, from a leaky gut. Anything that causes a heightened inflammatory response is going to stimulate rank one. When rank one is stimulated, it stimulates osteoclasts. What do osteoclasts do? Well, they release calcium. They cause degradation of the bone. The bone starts to get weak. What happens when the bone gets weak? Where does this calcium go? What happens in the body? Starts calcifying the organs, and so you're going to get a calcified blood vessel, calcified brain, calcified heart, calcified kidney, and your body, that's the aging process, eventually ends up turning into petrified wood, and then we die. I mean, that's the aging process, is we get hard, petrified, and calcified, and die. And so we really have to be careful in looking at the bone metabolism. We've got to be careful in looking at rank one. So how I handle, basically, osteopenia and osteoporosis, I don't use generally the bisphosphonates, because the studies really have shown that even though you develop bone, the type of bone and the bone matrix you're developing is really fairly brittle. And it would be a difference of like dropping a glass or dropping a piece of crystal. When a piece of crystal drops, it just shatters into a billion pieces. And that's kind of how the bone is growing. It's growing in that fragile state, even though it's getting more dense. And what we really want to do is we want to develop a better architectural structure. And what has been shown to really develop better architectural structure, other than bisphosphonates, would be optimizing vitamin D3, making sure your levels are optimal, not just 30, but up above 60, 70. The use of parathyroid in patients with hyperparathyroidism is very effective. Estrogen does not build bone, but estrogen causes a reduction in bone loss. And so it's actually inhibiting the osteoclasts. Now, what builds bone is progesterone and testosterone. And so when you maximize those hormones, you're actually building bone. In recent literature, some very important nutrients are boron. Boron's been very important. Strontium. Studies I've read show that strontium are actually as effective in building bone as some of the other injectables, like the calcitonin. So before I would go to calcitonin, I would certainly want to use vitamin K2, strontium, boron, bioidentical hormones, maximize vitamin D3, and then later on, if I'm dealing with an osteoporotic patient that's pretty severe, I will occasionally use calcitonin, just to help bring calcium into the bone, but I do want to stay away from the bisphosphonates. Does that make sense?
Very much so, and thank you so much for that explanation. We're going to just take a short break right here so that Progressive Radio Network can tell you about more of the wonderful shows that we have right here on PRN. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Kenneth Orbeck at drkennethorbeck.com. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're back right here with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we're going to continue our discussion with Dr. Kenneth Orbeck, who has been doing an excellent job. If you missed it or you want to hear it again, because Dr. Orbeck is going into some great detail, you can always tune in at Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm by going to the archives and go down to Natural Nurse or any of the other excellent shows that you can get information about right here. So, Dr. Orbach, thank you for that wonderful description of what people can do other than using some of the drugs, which seem to be pushed on people the minute they turn 50. And you are offering so many alternatives. Now, tell us how you do work with testosterone, particularly in men that you determine are low in that.
Okay, and that's a great question. Just for the audience, some quick symptoms of low testosterone. We talked about this briefly. Muscle mass loss, body fat increases around the breast, abdomen, and hips. Lack of libido is certainly an issue. Loss of nocturnal erections or erectile dysfunction. This is a big one here, is a decreased sense in overall well-being. Patients may often feel anxious, a lack of self-esteem, no confidence, losing competitiveness, reduce a sense of overall well-being. Also, you have a decline in cognitive skills, concentration, memory, and it's also associated with cholesterol derangement. So I wouldn't put anybody on any cholesterol medication until I first balance their testosterone. So let's talk about now a gentleman comes in and they have these symptoms. What do I do? Well, what I do is initially do a set of laboratory work, and that includes a free testosterone, a total testosterone, a bioavailable testosterone. And I look at it this way. The total testosterone is the entire amount of testosterone in the whole body. The bioavailable testosterone is what's available if the body needs it, and it's bound to albumin and free. And then the free testosterone is what's really in the serum that's out there to stimulate receptors. And that's what I treat on is free testosterone. Testosterone is very tightly bound to sex hormone binding globulin, so you've got to be very careful. That as that protein goes up, it can steal testosterone and keep it, you know, not available to the body. We look at luteinizing hormone, which is a stimulatory hormone from the brain to tell the testicle to
you
make testosterone.
You look for luteinizing hormone even in men?
Absolutely. LH
That's
is very,
very
important because, yeah, I look at LH and FSH. FSH is responsible for production of sperm. LH is responsible for production of testosterone. And so if you have a gentleman with low testosterone and high LH, then what that's telling me is the brain's telling the testicle, come on, guys, make more testosterone, and the Leydig cells within the testicle can't do it. And so you know that that person's probably going to be in need of testosterone replacement. And then two other important factors, obviously, is PSA. We got to make sure our PSA is down, you know, suboptimal. I mean, low and optimal. And
now,
then what about
Dr. Orbach, the warning that we've heard at times about using something which is quite gentle, like saw palmetto, but when we use it, it might interfere with the PSA reading. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'd like a virgin PSA when the patient comes in. I would like to know what it is. Certainly on my men and testosterone, there are powerful nutrients that I do incorporate into testosterone to keep the prostate healthy, and I'll talk about that in just a second. Soft palmetto is one of them I like. But remember, too, that PSA is not all definitive, that it's very variable. And what I'm looking at is I'm looking at a low normal PSA. Anything above 3, I get a little nervous, and I'll check a free PSA, and I'll check the ratio of free to total to see if I need to investigate further before I use testosterone. And let me tell the audience, first of all, testosterone is not associated in causing cancer. But testosterone will break down into both DHT1 and DHT2. And DHT1 can actually cause a little bit of benign prostatic hypertrophy. And so that's why we want to keep the DHT a little more under control. You don't want to get too high DHT because it will affect the prostate. Now, if you already have cancer and the cells are dormant, so let's say you have some type of cancer cells and you don't know it and your PSA is high normal, 3.5, 4, and you give testosterone, you can stimulate that cancer cell. So testosterone doesn't cause cancer, but it will actually feed cancer if it's there. I had that in one individual. We actually diagnosed his cancer very early because a little trial of testosterone raised his PSA, and we caught it before we would have ever caught it before, later down the road, and he was treated very effectively. So those are kind of the panel I look at. I also look at estradiol, and then I'll decide which type of supplementation to begin the patient on. I'm not a real fan of transdermal testosterone use. You have an enzyme
Let's define that a little bit. I know what transdermal is, but just let's describe that to the listeners in case they don't.
I'm not a real fan of putting testosterone on the skin. When you put testosterone on the skin, there's an enzyme that lives in the skin. It's called 5-alpha reductase. And that enzyme basically metabolizes testosterone into DHT that we talked about before. Dihydrotestosterone is a very potent form of testosterone, and that DHT can affect the prostate. It has also been speculated, and I think that this has also been studied, that DHT doesn't go into the blood, into the brain very easily. It doesn't cross what we call the blood-brain barrier. And so you don't get that free testosterone into the brain that you need to develop the real euphoric effects of testosterone and giving your vitality back. So in my practice, I have found that placing testosterone on the skin has not been that effective. Also, when I place it on the skin with the DHT, I may have some estrogen issues. The other way to give testosterone now, of course, is to inject it. And there are two ways to inject it. You can inject it subcutaneously, which would be like giving insulin. Basically, you just put it in the belly or in the side of the love handle. It's a very small syringe, maybe 5/8 of an inch. And you can inject testosterone.
Is that something a patient can do on their own at home, or would they have to come into the office? Oh, they could. Okay.
No, they can do that on their own. They can go home, they can inject and do that on their own 2 or 3 times a week. I have patients that don't like to do that. They just don't like injecting themselves. And with sub-Q injected testosterone, you may get a little bit elevation in estradiol. And you get a little fluctuation in testosterone, too. You get a little peaks and troughs. And then the other way of delivering testosterone, of course, is with pellet therapy. That's not a new kid on the block. It actually goes way back in history. If you look at the archives, pellets were used for a long time. But it's been really more popular lately, and there's been a lot of different hormonal clinics using pellet placement. So what a pellet is it's a compressed testosterone substrate that's usually compressed into something natural like cholesterol-based, so it's all natural. And it's compressed under like 1,200, 1,500 pounds of pressure, and that pellet's very small, like the tip of a pen, and maybe about a half inch long. And each pellet is about 100 milligrams. They can vary. You can get different doses. And then you make a very, very tiny incision, and you simply slide in a trocar into the fat, and then you place the pellets right down in the fat, and they last then approximately somewhere between 3 and 5 months, and the average is 4 months of steady testosterone release. And that has been, frankly, the most optimal way in the last year that I've used testosterone and have gotten the best results. I've done all forms. I've done on the skin, intramuscular, sub-Q, into the fat. It's called sub-Q. And I've done pellet placement. So I've had experience with them all. And, it depends on the situation. It depends on, the patient does have to come in every 4 months. And so if there's long distances involved, then sometimes we have to use injection therapy. The most important thing for the audience to realize today is that testosterone is critical. You must have testosterone in order to maintain metabolism. It also is important to know that how you take the hormone really is an issue of the effectiveness of that hormone. And that goes with all the hormones. When I give a woman progesterone, if she takes it orally, it's calming to the brain. It stimulates GABA. It helps her sleep. If I give it across the skin, it does not bypasses the liver. It does not go through the liver. They don't get that euphoric effect in the brain to help them calm down. So every hormone, depending on its delivery method, has both the efficacy, how it works, and also the side effect profile. Like with estradiol, for example, we don't give orally because we know there are issues there with side effects. And so,
when you say estradiol, you don't give orally. Certainly, in conventional medicine, it seems like they do that.
Yeah, that's very true. But if you look at the studies, oral estrogen causes a rise in the possibility of gallbladder disease as well as blood clots, and so you have an increased risk of stroke and heart attack. And we elect not to do that. I think a safe method of estrogen is obviously across the skin, or we can also implant that. Estrogen I do like across the skin, and testosterone I do not. So as long as a practitioner is aware of the various hormone delivery systems and the pros and cons with each, and knows the optimal response in the studies, in the literature, then I think you can get a very effective hormone replacement program in place.
Wow, that is so great that you have so many individualized treatments, both in terms of form, format, exercise protocols, food that is individualized according to allergy testing. And although we're talking about hormone replacement therapy, how different your discussion is from the mainstream conversation of just everybody as they reach a certain age and boom, they just get and all the same form and the same kind and with this high level of adverse events. It's a completely different thing. Just briefly, because we're actually, oh boy, we're right at the end of our time together, I'm afraid, but I would love you to tell our audience the best way to get in touch with you, Dr. Orbach.
Well, the audience is obviously from all over the country, and so I think the best way to get in touch of a really good qualified hormonal replacement specialist is to go on the website, bodylogicmd.com, and all you'll have to do is you'll have to click on a state, and it'll show you the body logic in that state, location, and the physician. Every physician is highly trained. Each physician is board certified in anti-aging medicine and has been through the full fellowship through the anti-aging accreditation, the A4M. So we all have a good basic background of nutritional, hormonal, and metabolic medicine. So that's the best way to get a hold of us is on the website, bodylogicmd.com.
Well, thank you for a fabulous in-depth and evidence-based presentation. We definitely appreciate that here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And listeners, we definitely appreciate you, and we'd love to hear from you. Get in touch at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And until next time, from myself, Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, we're hoping that you stay healthy.